Do you ever feel like you're podcasting?
One, two, three. Duplex, can you lead them in?
I definitely can. Let me make sure. Okay. So make sure I'm recording. Okay. Let me center.
Wait, do we need to do another clap sync or?
No. I was make sure I was recording. Okay. And I am. All right. Let me center my chakras here. Let me get ready for this podcast episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome
to another episode of the first podcast. We're here today with Ross Scott. Ross, go ahead and start the episode for us, if you don't mind.
Sure. I don't even remember what the context was or anything, and there was some music playing earlier, so I'm almost imagining this is like an old, like, kind of 1930s, like Vincent Price introducing this as like a scary tale.
So. it'll be a scary tale, trust me. That's just every episode.
You will be shaking in your britches.
Britches isn't a 1930s term, I think. I think that works.
Yeah.
Welcome, Ross.
Thank you.
Okay. So I wanted to bring this up because, this happened to me the other day, and it was really weird. Okay.
Wait, should we introduce the guest first?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, hey. Yeah, okay. All right. Ross, introduce yourself, bud. Tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are.
Okay. I'm Ross. I make videos on YouTube. I've kind of bounced around to different things. Probably most famous thing I've done is Freeman's Mind, where I play through Half-Life and just voice all the thoughts of Gordon Freeman, silent protagonist, and try to make it as entertaining as I could.
If you have not yet submitted your identity to the retinal clearance system, you must report to Black Mesa personnel for processing before you will be permitted into the high security branch.
Yeah, high security. That's why we leave armed missiles lying around for everyone to check out.
I've also done random kind of machinimas, most of them in the Half-Life 2 engine, civil protection, and up. I also do a kind of somewhat surreal game review show called Ross's Game Dungeon, and I'm hoping to eventually get kind of a 3D animated movie made that I'm working on off and on. So, I don't know if I'd recommend watching my stuff, but I'll definitely promote the movie once it's finally done. So,
yes, please.
All right,
that's awesome.
Now that's over with, I want to get back to my story. Okay, so. Yeah. So, okay, I was on break at work, and I was looking at my water bottle, and I saw that it had a kosher label on it, and at first I thought that was, like, kind of dumb, because, you know, like, obviously water is going to be kosher, but then I realized that, like, someone got paid to do that, and now I kind of want his job. Like, there's some guy out there whose job is just, like, slap kosher labels on stuff that's obviously kosher. Like, that must be a really sweet gig, if you think about it.
Question. What is kosher? I always wondered that.
Kosher,
because I see it on like pickles.
Kosher means it's okay for Orthodox Jews to consume it, to eat it or drink it.
Is that really what that means, or are you fucking with me?
Yeah. No, that's
yes.
Yeah, why would I lie about that?
Classic gag, Lars.
Well, I mean, it's also used more generally to say something's like legit or, you know, certified.
Mm.
That's the classic definition.
Wow. Yeah, but,
and just to shatter your dreams, that probably isn't his only job. It's probably that's probably part of the entire kosher lineup. So he's also certifying the kosher food and the meals and breakfasts and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So there's probably no single kosher water thing. It's just all collective.
No, I'm pretty sure it's one dude who goes around. He's got a JPEG of this is kosher free, and he goes up to the label designer, and he plugs his USB into the computer and helps him drag it onto Photoshop.
I got this.
It's just like
allow me.
It's just one of those situations where it's like, I love those. How do I put this? I love those bullshit jobs out there where it's like, you've somehow stumbled your way into a situation where you have almost no responsibilities, or your responsibilities are trivial and you're still getting paid for it. I would love to have a job like that.
I don't know if the guy who certifies kosher things is just coasting through life.
I'm talking about in general, though. Like,
sure. I thought you were going to take it in the direction of like when food just lies to you. Like you said, well, not lies, but just like sells itself in the wrong way. Like when candy says it's fat-free.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
99% fat-free. It's like, wow, it's so good for you.
So yeah, it's I want you to elaborate on kosher a little bit more. So it's safe for Orthodox Jews to eat. What does that mean? Like, it's safe for them to eat.
Okay. So in Orthodox Judaism, and I have only a little bit of Jewish blood in me, so like I might butcher a little bit of this, but from my understanding, it's like there's regular Jewish people, and then there's Orthodox, which is like super hardcore, like very following the rules, like the kind of people who will design an elevator that is constantly going up and down again without pressing the button, because technically it constitutes work, and they have like a day every week that they can't do work according to Jewish, like the Old Testament law.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interpreting the Old Testament literally. So anything about, you know, not eating shellfish or pork, like that's considered like a, I mean, I'm not an expert at all, but that's the idea. It's a literal interpretation rather than a more, you know, metaphorical one of the Old Testament.
I see.
As much as that allows, because, you know, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of trivial things that can amount to the death penalty in the Old Testament if you
come
through it. So.
Yeah. Wait, so, okay, so the elevator thing, that's kosher? It's just not...
Well, kosher's for food, but...
Oh.
Yeah.
You could call it kosher. You probably eat the elevator.
You can probably eat it and you're fine, according to Jewish law, but... No, I just said the comedy of the situation is that, like, obviously water is going to be okay for Jewish people to consume. So
I don't know, man.
Why do they need to label it?
Have you ever had Dasani?
No.
Oh,
my voice just cracked.
That has pig blood in it, so that makes sense. Yeah. Actually, kosher.
Yeah. I called Dasani.
I was gonna say Dasani tastes like it's been filtered through AA batteries. So I don't know if that would be kosher exactly. At least in the way you're putting it.
Is eating batteries kosher?
I don't know. Maybe.
Now that if you had a pack of batteries and they said they were kosher, that would be a story worth telling.
I think it'd be funny to, like, if a company did that, where it's like stuff that isn't even food, they just label kosher, like, technically you could eat this.
Like that kids safe paste that you can, like, that little babies can eat and not die, but they say it's kosher as well,
right?
Just in case your child's an Orthodox Jew as well.
Yeah,
right. Zwick the editor asks, is semen kosher? That's a good question.
I'm gonna look that up.
I don't know. There's no label.
I don't know any professionals.
I need to see a label. I think,
but there should be. Ross, if there was a label for semen, what color scheme would you say?
I feel like this is a category where this is your portion of the broadcast. You know, I feel like I would have nothing to contribute to this. So
I think this is just an Amir part of the podcast. I have nothing to add to this either.
Yeah, this is my segment. Now here's the part where I play a song. The song is called Kosher. Went to the store, bought a vial of semen. I asked the teller, is this kosher, man? He said, get the fuck out, and he called the cops.
Thank you, Doplex. Okay.
Yeah, no problem.
So, I mean, I have a lot more topics to talk about, but I want to get this out before I forget about it, because I did forget about it before TJ reminded us. Kudos, you had a story that you were alluding to last time on the podcast about getting naked with Keemstar.
What?
Oh,
that's right.
Ross, are you familiar with who Keemstar is?
A little bit.
Okay.
I know he's controversial.
Yeah,
I was going to ask. I think.
Yeah, well, please elaborate, because I want to ask Ross what he knows about Keemstar.
That's about the extent of it. I'm really in the, you know, I kind of see the internet as just a giant tool, and there's different things that you can focus your energy on, and kind of YouTube celebrity drama. That's never really been the direction I've taken it. So,
yes. By the way, that's completely fair.
I know very little about Keemstar, but I am familiar with the name and could pick him out from a lineup, probably.
Honestly, man, I think that's pretty healthy. Like, that's just a good place to be consumed with that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I envy you,
that's
man.
A good mindset.
Well, hold on. How about this? Let's save that story for when someone actively, you know, is much more in tune with who Keemstar is, so it'll be more interesting for them to listen to.
Yeah, it might be wasted on me.
I would like to talk to Ross about, I do think that is kind of an interesting topic, is how you view the internet. And also, as someone who's been creating content for so long, like, you've seen, I mean, we've all been on the internet for ages, but as someone creating content for it, you must have seen so many kind of different things rise and fall
that's
genres.
I think that's the reason I'm even on here now, is because I was like kind of in the early wave, you know? And as time progresses, the people who are there first kind of have a natural advantage over people coming in later. So,
right.
By the way, just a real quick side note before we get into that. I think that's awesome that we're just doing like this multi-episode dick tease for that story. Like, that's going to keep the viewers hooked. That's a really good idea.
And we just never tell it.
Well, I mean, going back to like the classic radio show, you know, you might have like a short segment. Or that might have been more theater or the cinema, where they'll show like a 5-minute episode of a like ongoing thing, like Buck Rogers or something, and then you get to your feature presentation. So you can kind of like tie it into a few episodes like that.
Next time,
what if we just never told that story?
I'll give away one word of the story each episode, and 500 episodes will be the place.
People have to put it together like the Zodiac Killer's note.
Yeah.
So here's a question, Roz. You've been on the internet for a billion years, and I kind of have too. And I'm just kind of curious, what's something that you like about how the internet has evolved, and what's something you dislike?
Well, I guess the easy thing with like is just more of it. I mean, what I like most about the internet is kind of the long tail aspect. You know, so if I'm digging into some 30-year-old abandonware game, hey, maybe somebody else did have a map on this or something like that. And
sure,
yeah.
And the more, as for things I don't like, I'm trying to think of like something that's like specific Keemstar. To the internet, not just sort of. I mean, I guess it is getting a little scary with the kind of conglomerate. I don't even know what the right word is. Conglomeratization of it, you know, we're kind of melding together. Well, there was a story not long ago where the creator of Terraria, the game, he recently just woke up. He's locked out of his Gmail, locked out of YouTube, but basically locked out of all Google services, which he was using heavily. And I'm not I think it got resolved, but maybe that was just a glitch in the system. Maybe he's just typed the wrong word. And it's kind of... It's a little worrying when, you know, just a glitch in the system can kind of ruin your life, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was linked up to Stadia, which, like, his Google account was linked up to Stadia, which was, you know, used to host Terraria on Stadia, probably one of the only good games on Stadia. and, it like, was it taken down, or was there was some issue because his account was locked up? There was some weird thing where it affected Terraria's placement on Stadia. And it's just, like, and Google was just not as helpful as you'd think they would be for someone hosting a game
on their
platform.
And it kind of sucks just, you know, waking up locked out of your email and YouTube account. And I think he might have been using like Google storage, like Google Drive. I mean, just like all shut down, bam, you know?
There is that like early days, like, back in the day before there was this, I know what you mean. I see you're struggling now. I can't think of a better word than like conglomerate, but back when it was just kind of like a series of websites, like your friends would just be like, oh, hey, check out this website. And you just go there and then someone would like upload videos to it or like, oh, you have to check out this forum. It's really funny. And it was just kind of like, you kind of saw all these websites as equals almost. Like you would be willing to go on these strange little websites. I think these days I don't go outside of like the four the full
okay, that's something I don't like about modern internet too, is you really have to be way more security conscious. Like gone are the days where you could just create like a GeoCities website or something and like, there you go, you're good. And my own website's gotten under siege by distributed denial of service attacks and other stuff. And it just, like, if you were just create a WordPress site right now, and it could get hacked. I mean, unless you're really conscious about that.
I do feel like the internet is too overpopulated, you know, just not even with but just like content, just stuff, you know?
Yeah.
We need to go back to dial up.
We do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the solution.
Limit how much people can. Well, there is that thing. What's it called? It's called like the summer of, or September. I can't remember what it's called. There's a name for when the internet was first kind of allowed to like open to a general audience, and before then it was mostly just a bunch of like hyper nerds. I think this was in like the 80s or something, you know, it was like when the switch was first flipped, and it was kind of those guys marked it as, you know, before then it was this like tight-knit community of just like cool people, and now they're letting anyone in, you know. But then I feel like we probably have that same thing as well. Where
it was pretty gradual, because you had like what, the BBS boards or something, or before. I mean, there's a transition, because first you had stuff like DARPANET, and then you had just stuff where you pretty much had to be a nerd to even connect to it. And then it led to like browser level on dial up. And that's when the public had a taste of it, but even then it took a while to get going.
It's like, it's all relative, really. Like, I'm sure when the sort of browser-based dial-up stuff first happened, it was probably like a huge influx of people, and like people using AOL online or whatever like that, I think, got tons of people
AOL is a pretty good landmark.
But you look back, that for me was my, you know, that was when I was like, oh, this is great. And then now where it's like, everyone, you know, you go on Facebook and it's all like boomers and your parents, you know, like, and those are the people who were like the late, super, super late adopters. So now I see it as like, oh, now everyone's on it. But I'm sure when AOL first came out, all the hyper nerds who were on it before that were probably like, oh, damn it, now the internet's getting, you know, ruined again. So it's all just a matter of perspective, I think.
That brings up an interesting kind of topic, though. Which is, well, like a question for the podcast. Also, I want to say, Kudos, when you said the Switch, my first thought was not like a mechanical Switch, but the Nintendo Switch. I was thinking, that's really effective branding by Nintendo. That is now my thought process.
They should call it the Nintendo And. And then every time you say And, it's in your brain.
Yeah. But here's my question for the podcast. This is just kind of like a general idea of how many decades back would you be cool with having to transport back to? Mm. Like if there's like a wizard who came up and said, you have to go back in time. How far back would be tolerable for you?
Oh, sure.
I think about this a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I've come to the conclusion, as a person of color, there are definitely certain eras that I do not want to go to.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Like, I love the whole feel of like, you know, like 1940s and the 50s and like all that. And like, I would love to just be a fly on the wall during that era. But I feel like if I was a person on the wall during that era, I probably wouldn't have as much fun. So I'd probably just go back to the 90s, honestly.
Okay.
Or the 80s, maybe.
Well, that wasn't really the question, though. The question is how far, what's your breaking point? That was what it sounded like to me.
Well, would your breaking point be the 90s, or?
I'd say probably, like.
We're going back, like, our current age. Like, you get teleported back.
Yeah.
Are you saying, like, you're born in that age?
Yeah. You want to elaborate, Lars?
Yeah, Lars, I'm sorry, you bitch.
Can you calm down.
Fucking asshole.
You want to repeat the question?
Do you just get teleported back, like, at your current age, or do you get born, like, or would you be born in that era?
Yeah.
Let's say you're 20.
Sure.
20. Okay. All right. Yeah, I would say for me, probably, like, the '80s. That'd be my breaking point. Maybe the '70s.
I was thinking about it in terms of technology, but I guess.
Well, yeah, but you got to account for other stuff too.
Sure. Yeah. No, you bring up a great point. That actually reminds me. I know that he's kind of been like disgraced now, but Louis C.K. had this bit about like how if you're a white guy and you get transported back to just about any time, it would be awesome, like for you. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking,
no, honestly.
Like, yeah, go ahead.
I would say, honestly, if I can get transported back in time as a white guy, I'd go anywhere.
Yeah.
You could go.
But you know what? I don't have the same privileges as you fuckers.
Well, what if you got teleported back in time to somewhere in South America, though?
Oh, yeah, maybe I'd be fine.
I would imagine you'd be fine. We would be the odd ones out if that was the case.
Right.
I'd probably want to avoid World War II, and be nice to have a polio vaccine, too.
Yeah, that would be useful.
Yeah, yeah, Russ. What if you could take the polio vaccine with you?
Oh, okay. Well,
you got to put it in your mouth and then you hop in the machine.
I mean, I like technology, but I mean, I could adapt. Still, would want to avoid World War II or any of the world wars, really. I mean,
Vietnam as well.
You could go back and start a World War III.
Vietnam. I remember hearing stories about like the Vietnam ways to get out of that. Like they're actually selling books of like medical things you get discharged for. Actually, for Vietnam, I've heard of one where obscene tattoos you could get. And one I heard of was getting a fuck you tattooed on the side of your hand. So when you made a salute, it had like fuck you, like right across the center. So
that's sick.
So that's one that's not like too invasive in your normal life, especially if you wear gloves. But yeah, you could probably get out of Vietnam. But
yeah,
well, they cut your hand off and then make you fight anyway.
Well, just with nubs.
No, you have to go older wars for that.
Yeah,
sure.
It's interesting because like my original thought on this was like, how shitty of the technology would you tolerate? Like going back in time. Like, would you go back to dial-up? Would you go back to no internet and stuff like that? But, yeah, there's also something to consider where it's like, if you go back a certain amount of time, then you have to start factoring in diseases and stuff that don't have vaccinations at that point.
Yeah,
like if you go a certain distance back in time, you hit, like, the plague and stuff like that, too.
It's like when you're like, oh, if reincarnations are, I'll be reincarnated as like Elvis or like Obama or something. But then it's like, no, you'd probably just get, if we were like, I'd be born in the 20s, you'd probably like just get polio and die. So,
Also at the 17. Work conditions too. I mean, you're in the gilded, I don't know if you've read The Jungle but work conditions at the turn of the century were not great.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of take the things, concepts like a weekend or, you know, 40-hour work week norm, I guess. Even though that can change a lot. But
even like, you know, Dopek said the 80s. I like, you know, that's like a very, like, I guess, romanticized idea. Like, you know, as a gamer and everything, like, there is so much, like, culture that comes from then that would be, like, really cool to experience at the time. But I know I'd probably play, you know, you'd play, like, some of the games from the era and you'd be like,
that sucks,
man. I could have just played these in 2020. Like,
Well, the main thing you would get if you're a time traveler in the 80s for gaming, the main thing you would get then would be the arcades, because then you could go and go for the high score and have like a crowd of people around you, that sort of thing. So
That's why I think the 90s would be cool. It's like, you know, at the 90s we're kind of at the, you know, we're getting home consoles. The arcades are still around. We're kind of getting into like the 3D era. I feel like the 90s would be, you know, primo.
I think the 90s would be interesting just from like the perspective of, I was born in the 90s. So it'd be interesting to see like what it was like to be a functioning adult where like I can actually properly perceive what's going on instead of just having this weird hazy childhood memory of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause when you're born in the 90s, like the 90s just feels, like a hazy, colorful memory. But I feel like being an adult in the 90s might be a lot different. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to get that perspective.
You dress kind of weird.
I feel like the fact that we were born in that era, though, means we might be romanticizing it a little bit. Like,
that's what I mean.
I mean,
like, I want to see like what was it really like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was a teenager then.
Sure. Oh, we could ask. How you. Was it? Ross, tell us, what was it like being a teenager in the 90s?
It was pretty good. No, I'd say it's not completely romanticized because there was a lot of kind of creative cultural stuff, too. One of my all-time favorite TV shows is from the 90s. It was late night on MTV. It was called The Syphil and Ollie Show, and it was hosted by sock puppets, and they would just play various music and have interview with guests, and their guests could be just anything. Like, at one point, they interview Mars, the planet, and another one, they interview this rock guitar guy, and all of his dialogue, it's some sort of trick you do with electric guitar where it sounds like the guitar is playing his dialogue. I'm sure if somebody plays guitar, they know the trick I'm talking about. So it's like, hey, man, and it sounds like it's the guitar saying it. And
the
cool thing about the 90s is that there were kind of less rules for things creatively. We're still, like you mentioned, games, and like with games and television, well, television, very, we were still figuring it out, so you would see a lot more like weird creative stuff, where now there's still plenty of that on the internet, but for like more mainstream channels, it's much more of a business operation rather than figuring out what works. Or, well, I mean, one test you could do is compare like top music from like 80s, 90s, and then 2000s and onward, and see what do you like more. You know, pick the five songs.
Like movies and everything. Like the amount of sequels, I definitely think, or less original ideas after the 90s really kind of blew up. Like, that's when the industry realized, like, oh, we can get an easy return on investment if we just do a sequel.
There is that, because it's you can be cynical about it like that, but I also think that probably since we've been doing movies for, 100 years now, that we're starting to run out of ideas. Like, there's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think we are. I think there's plenty of ideas, but the thing is, the system, you're not going to get those ideas produced is what's going to happen.
You know? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, and I feel like a lot of these companies, speaking of the 90s, I feel like a lot of these companies kind of bank on nostalgia a lot, because, I mean, not even just movies. Obviously, movies, you got, like, TV shows. There's a lot of these companies are sort of, lately. Yeah, reboots, and, like, they're bringing back, like, junk food from the 90s. Just, like, anything to sell you your childhood, because it's weird. Like, nostalgia is, like, such a big seller, no matter what it is. If it's like something that brings you happiness, when you think back, oh, when I was pissing and shitting my pants, I used to eat 3D Doritos, and now they're on the shelves again.
Yeah, I just saw them on the shelves.
I've been going ham on those since they brought those back,
and it works. Don't fix it. Works.
It works.
You played
That's my
right
point.
Into their hands.
That is my point. It's selling nostalgia is like the fucking secret weapon of our current day and age.
I could be wrong too, but I imagine, like, just with the CGI and everything, movie budgets have just blown up big time too. So it's like, it's much more riskier for like companies to invest in a new feature film that has no it's a sequel, so we know there's going to be at least this much of an audience. I definitely think that's probably had a part to play in it as well, where they're going to go for the safe option if they're going to have to drop, $100 million into this new, like, CGI blockbuster.
I'm just kind of thinking in my head, like, what I would take if I could from each decade. Like, probably, like, the aesthetic of the 80s I would take. Maybe the junk food of the 90s. And from the 2000s, there isn't much that I really liked.
2000s were awesome.
That's interesting for me hearing this, since I'm a little older, because I had the same thought. I was thinking, well, what's distinct about the 2000s? It's like, well,
yeah.
I guess Auto-Tune kind of took off then, but that...
Auto-Tune.
I'll take Auto-Tune. I just want the internet culture, but that's more like, you can't really take that. Like, that's like a collective idea, as opposed to, like, here's some Crystal Pepsi that I brought with me in the time machine. I do miss that whole, like, those early days, like Newgrounds and even like early 4chan and shit. It was a vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, that and like early like online games like Habbo Hotel, RuneScape.
Oh, man. Classic. I mean, like, I've been binging Classic WoW lately because I'm a simple man. And that's such good nostalgia bait.
Wasn't that also kind of the era of... There was a very specific kind of raunchy comedy movie that was coming out in that era.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, not
the
40-Year-Old Virgin and that kind of stuff.
There was a lot of comedies.
The Scary Movie and all those.
Yeah, comedy was not necessarily a good place, but in an abundant place, I guess.
I can't really think of any comedies that have come out recently.
No. Well, they certainly have.
They're just so unforgettable. Yeah. Like, Step Brothers was, like, such a funny movie at the time. And, like, the Hangover one and everything. Like, the first Hangover. The other ones were okay. But, like, there were so many funny comedies back in the 2000s. And I can't really think of many since. I guess it's, like, the internet's just so much funnier.
Yeah, comedy's one area where you don't need a budget and you can go head to head with the very best Hollywood has to offer. If you have good
writing. If it's just some budget guy on like a webcam instead of like some like amazing fucking $50,000 camera recording,
right?
You know, with like all the lighting and everything, it almost seems kind of try hard compared to like also just like growing up on the internet, my sense of humor is just ruined. So like I find more fun, like humor from like screeching noise played over some like abstract clip than I do from like a cleverly written joke in a movie.
Yeah. Or a fart with extra reverb played over XXXTentacion.
Oh god, that is the funniest video on the internet. It was like Will Ferrell can't compete with that.
Or maybe he could.
Maybe he could, I don't know. All the comedies I've seen like Holmes and Watson one he did with John C. Reilly is fucking awful. But like,
yeah, right. We've talked about that many times.
My favorite Will Ferrell performance, if you want some redemption for him, check out the movie Old School.
He was good in that.
Yeah.
Old School's great.
Yeah,
his performance was quality in that.
Also, he was surprisingly good in Stranger Than Fiction, which was not a comedy.
Yeah.
Oh.
John C. Reilly's great as well. He's like, just him on fucking Tim and Eric. It's the funniest shit.
Check it out.
I think
check
that Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly are very funny, but they just keep getting typecast in these dumbass, Will Ferrell kind of movies, and it's just like...
I'm screaming!
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't want to watch the movie, everybody look up the tranquilizer dart scene from Old School. That's probably the best video you'll see all day. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I also did like him in... Zoolander. Zoolander was a great
movie.
Oh,
that's right. He played the...
Oh, yeah.
I hear the sequel to that movie sucked.
It was fine.
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
I haven't watched it
because I heard it sucks. Very
Again, sequel.
I feel like Zoolander is sort of like a good, like, sort of average for comedy. You know, it's not, well, for me, like, the funniest thing I've ever seen, but I don't, like, regret what I've done with my life watching it, you know?
It wasn't atrocious. It was just like, okay. Like, the first one was so funny,
It's like a good baseline for, like, okay, 5 out of 10.
That's a good way to put it. But the first one was so good. I think that was the thing. Is like, obviously, you're going to compare the two. And that's just
well,
like...
I think he's talking about the first one.
Are we talking about the first one? We're talking about the second one.
Okay, this may sound like blasphemy. For me, they felt kind of similar, but...
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's been a while since I've seen that movie, so it might be Rose.
But hey, that's something, because I've seen atrocious comedy sequels, you know, like Blues Brothers 2000. That one was pretty weak. I'm sure there's more blotted from my memory.
Yeah, I was a guest on the Stupid Sequels podcast. I know, for some reason, a lot of movies get really shitty sequels. It's like a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to bring something up, by the way, guys. Or Duplex, if you have something else to add to this, go ahead.
As far as shitty sequels go, even shitty sequels for shitty movies are somehow worse. Like Samurai Cop, I'm pretty sure I brought this up before, but Samurai Cop, the first one, it's regarded as one of the movies that's so bad it's good, and it's like the poster child of so bad it's good. And then when the sequel came out, they tried to do that again, but it was just like unironically garbage.
Yeah, this time they leant into it, and it was like, no, it was funny because you were serious.
It's bad.
Yeah, well, there's self-aware. Yeah, it's bad. You gotta It's like a quantum dynamic where, you know, if you're looking at the path of an electron, then it doesn't behave the way.
Right.
I have heard of that. That is a very obscure reference. But I
but it's
know
a good way to put it.
Yeah, I do.
That
like
is a good
it.
Way
yeah.
to put it.
Yeah, that's a good way yeah. to put it.
that was very profound.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's right. Lars, you can measure ahead. The path. I think it's like you can measure the location of an electron or its path, but not both. I think is somehow how it works. But anyway, once they know why they were funny, as opposed to it just happening by complete accident, then they can't recreate it because it's
right.
Yeah. Actually, can I just
it feels too generated.
There's another example of that. Me and Dopex have been very obsessed with this gentleman named Mr. Block You. He's the $19 is the $19 Fortnite card guy. If you know who that is, a meme going around
okay.
right now.
Okay,
$19 Fortnite card. But he's gone on TikTok and he got big off this random meme where he's giving away a $19 Fortnite card, and it's just like it's just perfectly bizarre. But you can tell he didn't do it for that reason.
Yeah.
You know, like it was just a perfect alignment of like the topic of Fortnite is kind of dead, so that's kind of funny. And giving away a $19 card is bizarre.
Not
and
then a just $20 card.
The animation is really creepy as well. He sped himself up talking and then redubbed it. It's just bizarre. But you can like he's gotten all this fame from it, but you can tell he has no idea why. Like that first one popped off, and he's just kind of like awkwardly trying to reverse engineer it. He's like, "Oh, I'll do more card giveaways because that was I guess that was why it was popular, and then that like kind of works, but not really." And that this is funny. It's just fascinating watching him like trying to figure out why people are following him and kind of getting
and
it wrong.
It just gets
time.
Worse.
Yeah,
he's like trying to be weird, but it comes off as just like. It comes off as weird, but not in the way he wants.
Yeah.
At least not in the way the internet wants.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of call that stuff comedy heaven because it's like...
It's a great subreddit.
Yeah, because it's like there's the comedy cemetery, which is like the death of comedy. But then it's like some stuff that's so like bizarre and unusual that like it kind of... It's like it goes to heaven and becomes funny again.
Yeah.
Just because it's... Right. Yeah.
I feel bad for the dude.
I
want to
promote
like,
a movie because somebody... posted a picture in the chat and I keep staring at it. It shows this Dance Dance Revolution pad. I recommend probably if you're listening to this, you should watch the movie The FP. I don't know if you've it
the FP.
No, oh, okay. Well here's the plot just in a sense or two. It's a post-apocalyptic movie where gangs are settling their disputes through Dance Dance Revolution.
I'm looking at this.
Sounds awesome.
And
what the fuck?
It has kind of the feel of the Karate Kid. You know, and everybody, just about everyone speaks in this sort of blended slang and Ebonics kind of thing, even though everybody's completely white.
Watch this tonight.
Yeah. No, this is a movie that has heart. Like, that definitely, it's one of the best comedies. It's definitely not for everyone, but if you're listening to this, then you're probably in.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the FP.
That sounds amazing. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, you'll... It'll give you something to think about, regardless of what you think of it. So.
Right.
I have some articles I want to get to, by the way, if you guys are willing.
Articles. Okay.
Okay. And I'm going to put this one in the chat. We'll just kind of describe it on air. So I was looking up Ross Scott, and I was actually surprised to learn that you died in 2017, Ross.
Oh, yeah. I thought you sounded kind of ethereal.
Yeah, what was that like, man?
What is this?
Well, I guess I don't remember. You know? It's like, you know, asking the person who gets hit by lightning and they don't remember anything. So it's
So you don't even remember it. Okay.
Do you want to read this title?
You've been reborn.
Lars, you psycho.
Such like, it's such like a hardcore thing to send. I have this article.
Scottish men, 25... dies of AIDS-related illness after a late HIV diagnosis. Ross Scott of Kirkcaldy found out that he had HIV in early 2017.
There's like
it's Kirkcaldy.
There's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it looks pretty dark.
I just thought it was really funny. Like sometimes when you look up, when you look people up, like someone else has that name, and it's like a very like a bizarre or like morbid thing happened to them.
What's this?
Because it's like Ross Scott's a fairly generic sounding name.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this picture has his face, and he looks like a guy crippling with death.
Yeah.
What's who comes up when you guys?
Yeah, I
don't
know. It
names?
Just feels dark. So I don't really have anything else to add.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I Google my name, I have a really unique name. So just me comes up. What about you guys? I'm gonna look up.
I think I get like a soccer player or something.
I got like a lawyer somewhere. I think. Oh, actually, I think maybe I someone named me also killed someone, but that was not me.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow. I'm sorry. I can't get over the fact that Lars sent an article of a man who died of an AIDS-related illness.
What's his name? Is Ross Scott.
Lars is like, this would be a great bit for the podcast.
Yeah, well, see, I'm somebody who can appreciate dark humor, but this one, it's just, I'm not seeing the thread, you know, to get from this to something funny. I mean, it's, I don't know, this just seems sad. Like, I know.
Dude, that's what's funny. Is it Lars just dropped this?
Yeah. Guys, you're looking for something that isn't here. It's literally just because they have the same name. Like, his name was Ross Scott. Like, I didn't like elaborately think out how to do like a skit from this or something.
I know, that's why it's funny.
Okay. You're like an ape, you just saw the same name and you're like, oh.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, I see. That was the joke. I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
His name is Ross Scott. I said that.
Yeah. I just looked right past it. That was my problem. Okay.
You didn't get what I was doing with this.
You thought Lars is just making fun of a guy.
No, I got it. It just seemed that seemed too obvious.
What
I guess
do you think of this
to me,
guy who died.
Lars just thought Lars was ripping out a dead guy.
Yeah. I have a great topic.
So anyway, check it out.
No,
this
I mean
idiot.
I get that's my name, but it's like he didn't die in a funny way. This is like what you make a. I mean, it seems pretty tragic. So
it's a horrible death. And now he's a bit on this episode.
Yeah, good one, Lars.
Great job, Lars.
Apologies if that was offensive.
Have you guys seen that movie Coco? It's the Pixar movie. It's based on that song, I'm in love with the Coco. But there's that, like, the story in that is like, you die twice. You die once when you, like, die, and then you die a second time when everyone forgets about you.
Oh, so we're this, keeping him alive.
So, we're keeping his memory alive. That guy's, he's now in, like, set in heaven for, like, another 20 years, probably, at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great bit.
Well, good.
Let's move on.
Good job, Lars. Yeah.
I have something that's slightly more.
That was good.
Slightly less mean.
I wasn't trying to be mean.
No, I don't feel like morbid. It was me. It's just, I'm not wondering like where you wanted to go with it. You know?
It's so funny.
I guess I didn't really think it through.
Lars just has like a manila folder of obituaries.
Next up, here's some child poverty stats. Like, you know, I feel like what else you gonna lead into? I mean,
Lars is on stage looking through all his cue cards and it's all just
so obituaries.
Yeah.
So this guy died with a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
No, I've already told that one.
God.
I have another article, which is a bit more, it comes from a dark place, but it's more uplifting. Like it's a positive story.
Okay.
This isn't related to anything. This is just something I was going to bring up on the next episode because I read about it and it was fascinating, which is that apparently back during World War II, I was hoping I could bring this up when we were talking about World War II back then, but I'll just bring it up now. Apparently Monopoly was used to free prisoners of wars from Nazi Germany. I thought that was really interesting. So
the board game.
Yeah. So what they did. Yeah. People were saying in the chat, wait, what the fuck? Yeah, this is actually kind of cool. So what they did is basically, this is going to sound weird, but the Nazi Germans actually did follow the Geneva Conventions when it came to their prisoners of war.
Okay.
Because they thought it would make them look bad if they didn't.
Maybe focus on the PR. You've got other PR disasters you should probably work on first.
Yeah. It might have been uneven too. Like, I remember hearing about, like, the, like, with the show Hogan's Heroes, they actually, there was some information about the actual Stalag that they had, and it sounded like it was just kind of starvation conditions for the prisoners of war. So, it, like, a lot of, like, you know, bread might literally be mixed with sawdust and stuff like that. It was rare that, so, I mean, I guess that wasn't, it was probably for a lack of resources rather than intentionally cruel treatment, but
I'm sure
it was a spotty thing, I imagine.
Well,
you know,
for
some
prisoners of war specifically, not for
people
ahead in
camps.
Of course.
Concentration camps, but the...
Yeah, but the, to continue this, the story,
yeah,
it was really interesting.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail it.
Oh, no, that's fine. It's interesting to talk about. And so...
They should have played Uno.
Well, so what ended up happening is basically... You guys know the Red Cross, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So one of the things Red Cross does during wartime is they'll send care packages out to different prison camps during war, like for the prisoners. It's like a charity thing, like a humanitarian thing.
to the prison guards as a reward.
No.
Good job.
And you know, they were happy to take them. And so what ended up happening is they snuck, like, they made Monopoly kits, but they snuck tools in them and, like, maps and stuff and, like, lockpicks and these things.
Oh.
And it actually helped, like, apparently, I think it was, apparently about 35,000 prisoners of war escaped during World War II.
Sure.
And it's like, they don't have the exact figure of how many Monopoly games helped with that, but it, like... It's clear that it helped somewhat because they were smuggling supplies to them under the guise of it like being like a board game to pass the time.
Monopoly now with new gun piece.
No, I remember I was reading, it was like one of the pieces, they added an extra piece that was like a lockpick or something. And it was perfect because they just thought it was a game piece.
Sure.
Like
yeah.
It didn't seem out of place.
That's brilliant.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Can we talk about how they used to drop Hershey's bars on people as well as like a morale, like there was a big like airdrop, they drop Hershey's bars. Is that a thing?
Wait, really?
Like, wasn't Hershey's like a big wartime candy?
I feel like it would be.
The Berlin candy bomber. I'm looking this up.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Hershey's is the worst chocolate I've ever tasted, and you guys should all feel ashamed that you eat it.
Oh, I don't eat it. I don't like it. I think it tastes bad.
Okay, good. So me and Lars are on the same side. Every American I talk to is
probably
is
tastes
like,
better if you're in a prisoner of war camp.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a prisoner of war, you take what you get.
Yeah, it probably tastes a lot better then.
But I know, like, most Americans I talk to enjoy it regardless of the fact that they are not in a prison camp anymore.
Oh, hold on, I'm getting a call.
You mean they just eat it willingly?
They just and it tastes like sick. It tastes like baby sick.
You know. I mean, I don't mind Hershey. It's not my, like, I don't eat it willingly, but I see what you mean. But that, I think that's because Hershey's chocolate isn't real chocolate.
Doflex, can you name a situation in which you're eating it unwillingly? Like, you're being forced
you know,
to
gun
consume
in my
it?
Head.
Yeah, that, I had that thought, too.
Yeah. Yeah, gun to my head. You eat this chocolate bar, and then it turns out to be the guy's shit.
Well, that's not... Hershey's then.
That's
shit.
Your business, Bucky. That's
I think you misunderstood the question.
Doplex TV.
Anyway.
Yeah, you can't get Hershey's bars here because they're universally hated. The only ones you can get are the cookies and cream ones because I guess those ones taste.
Those ones are good.
But I just find it funny. They've only got like the weird. Like alternate brand version, you can't just get like base, just standard Hershey's.
Here's the thing, and I know it's gonna sound weird on surface level, but I think if Hershey marketed a non-bile version of their bar, it'd probably be like much better because I think they use bile in it, right?
Yeah, they use lactic acid to like preserve
it. Wait, what? The fuck?
Which is why it tastes like sick. Because it's but like you know, you guys wouldn't, not you guys specifically, obviously, because you also have taste. But I think a lot of people in America just grow up with it, so it's just like, oh, it's just what it tastes like. But if you grow up somewhere where the chocolate actually tastes good, then
I've read the Subway bread is made using the same method they use to make like foam mattresses for exercise.
We talked about this.
Oh, okay, you're already
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good, I think the conclusion was that's kind of just everything. It's just like similar ingredients.
Yeah. And also that they stopped doing that.
Oh, right. Well, what's the newest? I feel like we always end up talking about Subway on this podcast. But what's the new thing with the tuna? Right, of course. Oh, wait, let me play some music. This episode is brought to you by...
Gonna have to cut this bit because it's not actually true.
Just eat it.
Just eat.
Consume.
Anyway. What were we talking about?
The tuna. What's in their tuna? That was like the newest thing.
Yeah, they figured out that the tuna was actually just chickens that they drowned because they figured that would make it like fish.
Right.
That sounds way too dumb to be true. There's no way that's true, is it?
It's not. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. What is it?
Can you imagine if it was, though? They just fill it with salt water.
There was leaked footage of the tuna processing factory, and they killed the tuna by punching them to death.
Yeah. Jared Fogle himself.
That reminds me of that one episode of The Inbetweeners where...
Oh, yeah, where they punched the fish on the boat. It's so funny. Yeah.
Great show.
They freak out. They don't know what to do, so they just punch the shit out of it. That's a good answer.
Show, guys. If you don't know what we're talking about, go look it up.
Yeah, don't watch the last movie. It's not very good. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I have a question for Ross. hi. How you doing? Hey. Hi. How's it going?
Hi.
So Ross, how is it being a creator who's been on the internet for so long? You've witnessed the titans come out of the woodwork. You've witnessed them fall from grace. How has being a creator for this long, has it affected your creativity? Has your creativity changed at all, and or your process for creating content?
The inflection you put at the end of that made it sound like this was like a submitted line here, like for an ad almost.
It is. You know. No, I wrote it down. That's my reading voice.
Oh, okay. I'm.
Up like sounding real inauthentic.
I don't feel that different.
I mean, I wrote it.
So I guess not that I've noticed. However, you know, some things that have affected creativity is it's waxed and waned, but it's better now. Sometimes the pressure of getting stuff out more and more to feed the YouTube algorithm in the past can kind of cut into the creativity or just throwing out stuff that maybe needed more time in the oven.
Right.
But, let's see. And the second part has affected my process. I feel like the story of my, I feel like better late than never is the story of my life. I'm right now kind of in the middle of kind of changing my process to get a little more help to free up more time in a way that I hope doesn't screw up the quality. So yeah, this is probably something I should have been doing 10 years ago, but here I am. So.
Hindsight is 2020.
Well, yeah, better late than never.
I've gotten some miscellaneous help on some things. Like, that's the thing. Like in the past, like I really couldn't even afford much in the way of help. Now it's not great. I'm paying by percentages of YouTube income because if I had to pay just like fair wages, I wouldn't even be able to make the video. I mean, that would be more than what I would get for it. But
right.
But yeah, I'm getting some help on the stuff that doesn't really need to be me doing it. It might even be better if somebody else is doing it. Like things like volume balancing or for a few episodes now, I've been paying someone to, like if I do raw takes for a video, they'll help chop it down to the good ones and then I can go over that. And I'm very slowly trying to do the work smarter thing.
Which is important, I think, especially now. You know, the internet moves so fast and you almost have to work smarter just in your process.
Yeah, well, I can afford to now.
That's, right. Yeah.
That's a good tip, though, is learning what you're good at. Because it's tempting to want to do everything as a creator, but learning what you do well and what you should outsource.
Oh, not even that. It's like, I mean, if I didn't have to worry about things like income, I would just like throw all my energy like at that movie thing I was talking about. But it's like, you know, if I go weeks and weeks and there's nothing, or a month or two and there's still nothing, then like, you know, the income starts dropping down and it's like, and then I go into panic mode. And then, so it's kind of, I'm probably I think the main reason I've sort of survived this is because I was in a little earlier. So I was able to kind of ride the popularity of being first on the scene for some things, or early anyway.
Yeah.
Which I envy the hell out of you for that. I always think, like, whenever there's a creator who's been around for so long, like, it's so fascinating to me that you had the, what's the word? I don't know. You had, like, the
gumption.
God, I can't think of the fuck. Yeah. Okay. That works. You had the gumption to hop on the platform. So
well, if it makes you feel better, you have much better tools now. I was thinking the first thought in my mind as you were saying that is, if I could show you what I did to do, like, some camera shots for, like, the civil protection stuff I did, you'd be like, what's wrong with you? You probably say that to be like, how could you do this? Like, what, like,
to be fair, everyone was on the same level back then, though. It was
what,
you know, like, well, for the most part anyway, like, the editing software was whatever, what, you know, used.
Well, the editing software was decent, but actually, I mean, for the early videos I did, I think YouTube existed, but it wasn't like a go-to option by any means at all. So just even finding ways to get people to see your videos was kind of a, it's still a challenge now, but at least now if somebody wants to watch a video, you can give them a YouTube link and that's pretty easy for them, as opposed to just kind of spamming out different forums and trying to talk them into downloading this file or, you know,
it's not a virus, I promise.
Yeah. So actually for the movie, I think there's some tools coming out by Epic on the Unreal Engine that's going to help a lot for, like, facial animation. So it's almost like I've been kind of waiting for parts of the technical aspects that are still catching up. It's stuff that's been around a long time, but if you're just a guy wanting to make a video, you didn't have access to this stuff unless you were independently wealthy. It's catching up slowly. So that's the upside, is you didn't have to deal with as much crap, or different flavor at least. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I want to ask some questions about your 3D movie, because I'm a 3D artist, so I find that interesting. So you say you're using Unreal Engine?
Yeah, that's the plan. It's basically going to be a machinima kind of thing where I'm probably going to steal a lot of assets from existing video games. I mean, I say steal, I'll have permission to use them, but...
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, Unreal Engine's like the main thing I use as well.
But, like, I want to take as many shortcuts as I can I'm talking about 3D movie. This is not going to be... One of the things I am going to be cutting on the quality is, like, visual fidelity. It's probably going to look more like good graphics from a game from, like, 2004, 2005, something like that, because you might be familiar with the Uncanny Valley, you know, where it just looks like, it just throws you off and creeps you out if something looks lifelike, but it's a little off. So I want to stay on the safe side of that, you know? And so I'm actually going to have to downgrade my graphics a little bit, because the resource, it's ambitious as it is. I want, like, stuff like the acting and the writing and the overall presentation to kind of sell people on it. Whereas I'm not even going to try to go for, like, Hollywood style graphics or anything like that. So.
Yeah.
Well, because I'll say you probably don't want to sit there and render a frame every 8 weeks. Like,
oh no, with Unreal.
Well, computers are moving ahead, and that, if that was the main problem, that's an easier problem to solve, really.
Okay.
But. It's more like you spent a week doing this animation for this one scene where they're talking and it still looks freakish, you know, with the eyes and Noah's cheeks just looking the wrong. I don't have a prayer if I were trying to do that. So.
The beauty of Unreal is render times are so low, which is why I use it, because I worked in a studio. I had to do the whole rendering thing and I fucking hated it. Nothing was worse than sending off renders and then you come into work the next day and you forgot to, like, turn off one layer, or you accidentally, you know, didn't set it up right. And now all of, like, last night's and yesterday's renders are wasted and you have to start over again.
I'm not going to have to do that. It'll be a different problem for me. Like, the way I explain it is, for me, as far as the total workload, animation is like the sun. And everything else, like, you know, maps, voice acting, right? Those are like planets. So,
that's a good way to put it. Actually, animations are so time consuming.
Yeah, like, I'm going to try and get as much cheap motion capture in it as I can. So,
Yeah. Is this going on YouTube or?
Yeah,
is this
it'll be on YouTube or it'll be a free thing. So it's
cool.
But it is going to be kind of like a feature length movie. So
right. Well, I feel like when things go on YouTube, they almost like don't have to be as polished. I guess you could say, like, you know, the way you described like a higher quality looking game from 2004. Like to me, that's. You know, if it's going on YouTube and it's like something that you independently created, I feel like, you know, that's fine. You know, like I feel like people aren't expecting.
Well, I feel like some it's not going to be like this, but I feel like the classic example of this sort of thing is South Park. I mean, the original was created with construction paper. I don't think the fidelity held that show back.
definitely, for comedic things as well. I don't think it can look too good. Like we were saying earlier about like these, you know, Hollywood comedy movies with these like super flash cameras and everything. It almost kind of detracts from it. I feel like the shittiness and having it be a bit ramshackle does.
Just blame that all on writing, though. I mean, special effects can be useful if you know what you're doing, but if you're just if you want to use them because you have them, then that's not going to help anything. So.
Right. That is true. Yeah. Writing is definitely important, but I also see what Kudos is saying about when things look a little bit more scuffed, then it does kind of add the comedy of it.
Like animated cartoons as well, like The Simpsons and stuff. Like if it was over animated, like if it was animated, like, you know, Snow White or something, I feel like that would kind of detract from the humor, you know, it would kind of be a bit weird, whereas like the shittiness of it, especially with South Park, shittiness of it does add to the comedy.
Yeah, well, with The Simpsons specifically,
if you saw a comedian get on stage and he was like ripped and he is like in a suit near like a chisel jaw and he's like trying to tell you jokes, you'd be like, oh. But then if some like kind of guy gets on with like a beer,
looks like he's been mugged on the way there.
You kind of relate to him more. It's a visual.
That would be kind of funny though. Like now I'm thinking about it, how like there's that stereotype where stand-up comedians kind of don't have their shit together. It would be funny if there was like a comedian who actually did and he was ripped and was in a suit.
That's
like,
kind of Seinfeld, right? Like, I mean, I don't know if Seinfeld's ripped, but he goes on stage in a suit, which always seemed a bit like,
I prefer my comedians to be a little bit more on the heavier side.
I'm just saying, like, I feel like there's one-off potential for humor there for, like, a guy who just subverts that and that, like, works that into his act. I could see it, is what I'm saying.
You got, like, Dane Cook and stuff, I suppose, who are, like, kind of good-looking guys. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but his whole thing was that he was just, like, fucking cracked out of his mind.
Yeah, and he was a bro. He was an epic bro.
Yeah.
I feel like Dane Cook's stuff has not aged well.
Yeah, not really. It was the funniest thing ever in like middle school, but now it's like it's just a lot of shouting,
like that movie Good Luck Chuck in like the uncut version where it's like a long sex montage.
What?
It's like, you don't remember that movie?
No.
It was like, well, the movie was about like it was a Dane Cook movie. He was like the main guy, and the whole premise to the movie was like every woman he has sex with, that woman will like find her true love. So he just becomes this like fucking, like he just has so much sex with all these like different women because they want like true love. And there's in the uncut version, there's like this long drawn out sex scene. It's just like, it's like a montage.
But was
of
he a producer
him having
also?
Sex with like, probably.
Well, there you go. I mean, that was the point of making the movie for him.
Yeah. Guys, that's what the 2000s, I guess, would be known for. That was the era of the unrated versions of movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're all really bad.
Has boobs in them.
Yeah.
Well, the Room was, I mean, there's obviously the very uncomfortable long sex scenes in The Room. And I'm pretty sure one of the first sex scenes with Johnny and Lisa was like the first scene they shot. He was Tommy Wiseau was like gunning for it. He's like, yeah, we have to start here.
I can't wait.
I always thought it was really funny in that scene where it's like, if you thought about the anatomy, his penis would be
a belly button.
At a belly button.
Yeah. I hate that.
Wait, are you saying that's not how sex works?
Well, I mean, all right. Another successful band on the first podcast.
It was the blurst of podcasts.
Ross, what are you playing these days?
Oh, I've been jumping through various games lately. I guess starting end of last year, beginning of this one, I kind of came to this attitude where, you know, the odds of, like, I mean, for younger people, of dying from COVID are pretty low. But I was thinking, well, what if I was unlucky in that? It's like, well, geez, I'd want to have more games scratched off. So yeah. I have like this big archive I've been trying to go through stuff I'm interested in.
Any standout
bucket
titles?
List?
Well, they all haven't. I mean, I can give you titles. Most of them haven't really been winner. Okay. One that was pretty solid, though the gameplay kind of aggravated me halfway through it. Yuppie Psycho. I definitely recommend watching a playthrough of that one. The idea is you're basically this like fresh intern going into just the corporation from hell, and it kind of mixes in with
this.
The occult and what? It's only like a couple of years, I think.
I've
maybe
never
even
heard
last
of this.
year before. I don't know.
Is it?
Oh, sure.
It's a pixel.
Is it like
art
an
thing.
Indie game?
What?
Yeah.
Is it like an indie game?
Yeah. A lot of these. Here's the list of some that I remember. Mother Gunship was another one I tried out, where the idea that one was okay. The gameplay kept me going on. It was the first person shooter where you're going. It's pretty goofy, but you're going through this invading force, and the idea is you have to construct all your guns from parts. And it can get pretty over the top with like what you want to fire and the balance of things. Let's see. Look at ones that are worth mentioning. Because I went through some duds.
Yeah, if you just have like a third.
What?
Do you have like a third? Because I feel like three is a nice number of recommendations.
Oh, for recommendations. Okay. Well, this one's okay. Again, so far these have been like the mixes. I didn't know how they were going to turn out. Aquatic Adventures of the Last Human. It's kind of a sci-fi Super Metroid thing where you're underwater. Though the ending got pretty depressing, but... let's see.
Now, are you? I do have a question. Are you attempting to like beat all these?
Like a fun threshold. It's like if I'm a. I played that one through. Aquatic Adventures of the Last Human. I got all the way to the end boss, and I said, "No, I'm not doing this." And again, Yuppie Psycho. I got halfway, and it's like this is not fun. The gameplay now, but then I watched the playthrough at the end of it. If the game's fun, I'll go through it all the way.
Right.
Let's see.
I have this thing which I don't know if you guys can relate to, because you just brought something up which has been a curse of mine for probably like 5 years now, which is that I'm really bad at finishing games.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite.
Really? Okay. Because
yeah,
I get to this point where it's like I've played to my satisfaction, and I'll just drop it and not even bother finishing it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's the game's fault and not you, then, you know?
Yeah. No, 100%.
But it's like with almost every game.
Well, then you just haven't found the right game, you know? I mean,
yeah.
If I like don't click at this, I guess if you count games where like you play it for like half an hour and you're like, oh, this just isn't really for me.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I do that as well. But like once I'm in a game, I will finish it. I guess like once I click with a game, I'm like, this is me from now on, and I'm gonna try to get as much value out of this as I can.
Oh, that's a good question for the podcast. Are there any games like just in your relatively recent memory where you were really excited to try it and it just didn't work out and you had to like refund it or something? I have an answer for that, but I'm curious if you guys do too.
I started playing Outer Wilds, the indie game.
Oh yeah,
the exploration one. I did like it. I think I just didn't quite click with it. Like I played it once, and it's also like so much the mood you're in at the time. And I think I started playing it kind of later at night, so I only like had enough time to play for like half an hour.
Right.
And I kind of got into it, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then I just kind of never picked it up again. You know, sort of. it's also to do with like what other games. Like I often think about games where like that did happen to me, where I just stopped playing. And it's usually because another game that I was really excited for came out. And I'm like, well, I can't I have to put this on the shelf now.
Mm-hmm.
And right. If it's a really good game, I'll come back later, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that's always my downfall with games. I think it was when Outer Worlds actually came out. The one that was made by...
confused.
The one that was made by the guys who made Fallout New Vegas, because I love Fallout. And I got really into that game, and I was playing it for a while, and I think it was... That came out around the time when, like, a bunch of other games came out. Like, I think Animal Crossing might have come out around that time. I don't remember what game it was exactly that dropped. But I remember I just completely stopped playing Outer Worlds and then played that and never went back to it, which is weird because I really liked that game. I never had the boner to go back.
There's some games that are so hard to remember. Like
I started playing the Outer Worlds and I think it was on Microsoft Xbox Game Pass or whatever it is, and I enjoyed it. But then I did the same thing where I was going on to something else and I just never returned to it. I don't know. It's a good game. Like, I enjoyed my time with it.
Well, if the game's good enough, you kind of hear it calling your name in the background, you know, like, I'm going to come back to it, you know.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then no, you know.
But and if it's a really good game, you'll play it instead of the game you're hyped for. That's a really good game.
That is true.
I have an answer, but Ross, I'm curious if you have an answer.
Oh, okay. Okay, so ones I was looking forward to, but then it ended up not being so great, or just ones in general ended up not being so great, or
ones that you were like stoked for.
I really liked the presentation from the trailer for We Happy Few, and then I played it and it just didn't really click so much. I played several hours into it, but the trailer was fantastic. It almost felt like a Twilight Zone episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel it. And even then, I thought the world they created was great. They just didn't take it in the right direction. You know?
Was it like the gameplay loop just didn't work? Or
No, I mean, I was hoping for this kind of weird, surreal society. And instead, it ended up being just this kind of emotional story about this guy with this lost brother and this old other woman he dated. I was thinking, man, you're just... It's wasted potential is what it felt like. So.
Yeah. That does remind me.
Oh, no, you go, Lars. It's fine.
Okay. Oh, you sound so defeated. That reminds me of, and this is actually a good game, but Bioshock Infinite apparently was going to be something completely different. And I've looked back on like the betas and like the trailers for it. And it looks like such like a cooler game, to be honest. I feel like we got the wrong Bioshock, even though Infinite was really good.
Yeah, but, I liked Infinite. Yeah.
Infinite was fun.
Well, I think the ultimate example of that is Duke Nukem Forever. If you saw the 2001 trailer.
Right.
I don't think anything will top that as far as what you got versus what was shown.
Yeah.
Right. Especially being shown for so long. I've come to the recent realization that, because I'm usually a fan of like longer games. I like games that I can play for a long time. But recently I've played like shorter games like Little Nightmares. I beat that one sitting and it was so fucking good because of how little commitment I needed to it. It was just like a fun little romp that was like done fairly quickly. That and Katana Zero. And I think I'm a bigger fan of shorter games now, specifically because of those games.
Yeah, I like shorter games now. Because I don't know, like, I'm old enough at this point where I can justify the slog for some games. Like a rare, on a rare occasions, if I really like
an RPG
like
or something.
Yeah, but otherwise, I just kind of want to get through it.
Yeah.
My answer, and a bunch of people are going to crucify me for saying this, is Monster Hunter World. I thought that was going to be one of my favorite games ever. Everything I'd seen about it looked super cool. And I'd played some of the previous Monster Hunter games, but something about like the controls and like the gameplay loop just did not work for me.
I've never played those games, but mostly just because like I don't like the armor in it. I don't like that really ridiculous like...
Oh, I love that though. I think that's really
I like that in WoW because it's like cartoony, but because the characters are kind of realistic in Monster Hunter World, but then they've got these like giant fucking ridiculous. I don't know. I have limits for my ridiculousness.
I really like the universe. I really like the aesthetic. I like the graphics and you know the everything about it was good for me except for the gameplay. That's the one place.
I encourage, if you feel like this, don't convince yourself like you need to play the game. Although I realize I'm sitting from a position of luxury saying this because I'm kind of a bottom feeder as far as game price. I'm a cheap ass gamer. I wait till stuff is just like $2, $3 years old before I pick it up. So I can kind of afford to burn. It's like, well, didn't it pan out. Oh, well, you know, whereas if you paid $60, I can see where this is kind of an existential crisis for you. Okay. I don't know. I feel like the industry is almost training us to like wait for games.
Yeah.
Because you get all the patches later and it's a lot cheaper. So.
Yeah, it's definitely that. Cyberpunk. Like right now I'm doing this. I know that people are going to crucify me again for this, for saying this, but I'm waiting for the $20 game of the year version of Cyberpunk.
I think that game might have been released like a year too early. I mean,
The game was still fantastic. I still loved it, but
I'm still waiting.
The story was amazing. I loved it. The story was amazing. Gameplay was pretty fun, but it was definitely half baked.
The latest patch has been delayed, and they had like this big apology for it. And I'm thinking, this feels like they just released it a year too early. I have a theory on that. I'm thinking, I mean, it's possible it was just the manager of the Bean Counter is just wanting the game out sooner. But I was also thinking, you know, it's inspired by the Cyberpunk 2020 tabletop game. I'm imagining like somebody manager thinking, no, we will release this in 2020, the end. Like this is symbolic thing.
Right. Yeah. that makes sense, actually.
Just in case any developers are listening to this and you want to take advice from me for some strange reason, I understand like you have your families to feed and stuff, but If you can afford to take the time, please do. Like, I would prefer a developer take as much time as they need in most cases. Like, I'm one of those people who, when I see, there's a delay, I'm thinking that's probably a good thing. Like, they reassessed and realized they weren't going to be able to meet this release date. And I'm very sympathetic to that.
Well, see, you're kind of talking to indie developers right now. For a company like Cyberpunk, like, the developers have no say in this.
Right.
Yeah. It's the investors.
I'm sure they would be happy to sleep, you know? It's like...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And also, developers, if you're listening, remove all guns from your games. I'm sick of it.
No, I'm alright with guns.
Replace it with ketchup packets.
Yeah, I want more swords and crossbows. Yeah. And crossbows are way cooler. Put six...
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So, Ross, if people wanted to consume your content... If people wanted to, I said this on the James Gap. If people wanted to consume your drip, where can people find you?
I have a website at cursefarms.com. You can look up Freeman's Mind and find me that way. I'm probably the most famous Ross Scott there is at the moment, I think, actually.
I think it's the common name.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Oh, I see. Right. Or prior alive. To this podcast, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so guys, go check out Accursed Farms, and Ross, thanks for coming on, man. I'm glad we were actually able to troubleshoot the stuff in the beginning.
Half an hour before this, Discord would not work with my mic and still doesn't, so I'm doing this on a crappy webcam mic, and then the nice one's being recorded that you'll hear this later if it's not live.
So if you're listening to the edit episode, you're welcome.
Yeah, so I was panicking prior to this, so that was nice.
I feel like basically everyone who's going to listen to this podcast can relate to this problem, because Discord audio issues are like taxes level in terms of relatability. Like everyone has them.
Yeah, well,
that's always true.
The thing is, I used to work doing PC repair, so I had an idea for a few tricks, and I went through their entire troubleshooting. So it's like Jesus. I still don't know. Yeah, they offered to postpone this broadcast. I was thinking, I'm not sure it's going to make a difference, you know?
Right.
The first time I ever had a call with an internet historian to collaborate with, I was like shitting my pants. I was so excited to talk to this dude. And my fucking microphone like bugged out. And I just joined this call. I just hear him say, hello? Hello? Are you there? And I was just like, ah! And I turned to be like, dude, I'm so sorry. My mic isn't working.
It's really funny though, like you bring up that there's a difference between having a computer issue just as like a normal person, but having a computer issue as a computer guy is way worse. Cause yeah. It's like, why is my troubleshooting not working? This should be working. And like, if you're lucky, you'll hear some obscure, like you'll go on Google, you'll see some obscure forum post from 2003 that fixes it somehow, but oftentimes not.
Computer problems, you figure, okay, it's probably one of these three things. But then I was in a position where it's like, no, I eliminated everything I could think of and went through all the steps. I'm thinking, Jesus.
Get your shit together, Discord. Seriously.
Well, it's only one of the most popular programs for audio communications. Why would this not be well documented?
The one thing I will give Discord credit for is they got rid of the whole wiffle flopping your sloofle dupes thing. You know how they used to have that? We're like,
oh god, I used to hate that.
Oh yeah. the random quirky XD.
Yeah, like they were like, our elves are smorkle dorking your like just it was your
penis.
Yeah, it was
Yeah, because you're not really in the mood for cute messages when this is happening too, you know?
Yeah. Especially in the emails. These were like professional emails where they're like, our plush bunnies are it was just awful. And I think they got rid of it.
Whipping and nay-naying your internet connection.
Yeah, I think they got rid of it because they were competing with Zoom and Zoom didn't do all that shit.
Yeah, so they had professional.
Anyway. That was good. A little tangent. We were going to close this, but yeah. Anyway, Ross, again, thank you for coming on. And
thank you, Ross.
This was a fun time. I liked you and friends.
This was a fun time.
I think this was an episode that I would want to listen to as a podcast. So
yeah,
that's cool. Time.
I want to listen to every one of our episodes, Lars.
Yeah. Anyway, you've been listening to the first podcast. Subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already, youtube.com/c/thefirstpodcast. Donate on Patreon if you want to get bonus episodes of the show, early listening privileges, a funny role in the Discord, a patron-only chat,
come on, everybody.
A platonic kiss from Doplex, and more.
Yar, I've got Crohn's disease!